Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Rich, first, you know, the tone of the show is going to be different than it might have been otherwise. I just got confirmation from someone in AEW who would absolutely not, who would be in the loop and not work me, that Hangman Page was legitimately injured. That match stoppage was not planned. It was not an angle. So I just want to start by wishing Hangman Adam Page the best. I'm sure, you know, hopefully it's not super serious. It's like a badly pinched nerve or something that where he just couldn't work and he's already told his family he's fine. But yeah, until we get further update on this, it's not a great, great mood, because the way that all played out at the end after that King Kong Lariat and Hangman landing kind of on the side of his head, with certainly some reverberations perhaps going down his neck, was bad. I want to be clear. It wasn't gruesome looking. It looked like a standard wrestling bump, and the doctor felt comfortable enough to roll Hangman onto his back. Normally with a neck injury, you don't move someone until they're in a neck brace and a back brace. I am hoping that doctor was competent and made a good decision, and that's a good sign. The worst case scenario is he shouldn't have rolled him over. Hangman was moving his right arm, so he had his extremities were moving. So this isn't a type of NFL scene where the player's not moving at all and people are scared. But nevertheless, live on TV, quite the disruption in what was originally planned for that match, although certainly I believe Moxie was going to win. So I'm a Rich fan. I will throw to you for your reaction now that I've spoken for a couple minutes on that situation, just kind of confirming the news.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate. You know, there's photos from the scene. My buddy Justin is in attendance. He most likely will be a correspondent later when we talk about it. But, you know, the cameras on the television side cut away from it. They loosened the bottom rope to let Page out, which also turned up at the end with the storyline for MJF's promo, because when he was rolling out, he rolled into the loosened rope, and I got a little worried there because I didn't want him to then get his neck hooked. It was just a mess. And so what was, I thought, a pretty good Dynamite was marred by just, you know, it's never something you ever think is going to be an injury that becomes the injury. I hear that so many times from so many wrestlers. You know, it's not the crazy bump. It's a very simple clothesline bump. And he took it from, you know, several people in attendance straight on the forehead somehow. And to have the torque of his body do that, I don't even want to speculate, but it's just, as Moxley said, I hope and pray that he can get back to the point where he can play with his kid and get up and go back and do what he loves. And until then, you know, we'll wait and see what the word from medics and from Tony and company are.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if people are going to have any issue with Moxley talking about, you know, it's dangerous anytime you get in the ring with me, and cutting a wrestling promo right afterwards. At this point, I have no problem with it. I think Mox has struck the right tone. It's a hard-hitting business. And if you hurt somebody, you know, Stan Hansen broke Bruno Sammartino's neck, and they talked about it for decades. I think that's fair game, just, you know, including on live television when you're kind of thinking on your feet and you've got about 8 minutes to fill unexpectedly, or at least, you know, probably three or four extra minutes compared to what was planned with MJF. And so, you know, I'm fine with that. It's a little bit uncomfortable knowing it was a legit injury, and Mox is, you know, it might come across as Mox is putting himself over as, you know, being super dangerous, but my stance is that is fair game. You took somebody out, and whether it's legit or selling, and people didn't really know for sure at that time, especially watching on TV, because of the way wrestling has unfortunately messed with people by making it seem like injuries are real when they're not, in a tone that I think is sort of cheating as a wrestling company with people's emotions. I think there's a certain tone that should be saved only for legit injuries. When I was pretty sure it was legit was when they were showing the rafters of the building instead of the scene in the ring. They weren't trying to get over Hangman being hurt, but also Tony, the look on Tony Schiavone's face, looking at the monitor. You know, Tony's as much of a regular, real human being as there is in this business. You know, yes, he's a performer because he's a wrestling announcer, but that looked like somebody who was looking down at the ring with human compassion and concern. And any thoughts on that, Rich? Just going back to my original comment on Mox, just kind of working that into his promo.
Yeah, we talked about this on our show, Everything with Rich and Wade, yesterday. But Moxley's been the adult in the room when it comes to a lot of things, and that's something an old school wrestler would do, like you said. And that's something you do to fill time and to keep from getting the crowd rattled and putting as much of you can the final 10 minutes of the show behind you, because clearly they ended well before they needed from a time cue standpoint. To your point with the announcers, not only did you have that, but Taz began in 10, 15 years of listening to Taz as an announcer, I've never heard him stammer. And he was clearly at a loss for words and clearly, you know, it seemed really just out of it. And even Excalibur saying new champion Adam Page and then having to change that, what happens next with Adam Page? It seemed like they were just all off. And if this was what people, you know, there's always going to be that person that says everything's a work, but you can look at people in pro wrestling, people don't act that well. And so when people are genuinely affected for a coworker, a friend, stuff like this happens. And so I don't have a problem with it because they were just trying to get through those 10 minutes. This isn't like the Owen Hart situation where you could end the show, but quote unquote, the show must go on. This is, they did what you should do. You know, I want to give AEW full credit and their doctors for stopping the match where it was, as opposed to the other old adage that kind of has been a bit of a misnomer of like, just keep fighting through, because they've gotten sick in the last 3 years for having matches where people were clearly injured and they allowed them to wrestle. Matt Hardy, Darby Allin, to name a few right off the bat. And so I think this was an adult move, and you just hope he can recover from this and they move on to whatever the next story is while he convalesces, if he needs time to convalesce. But on the whole, I don't have a critique for Moxley.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I this was a difficult situation with live television time to fill. I got to say, and this isn't to make light of the situation, because we simply don't know the severity of what happened to Hangman, other than it's rare a match gets stopped. It's rare a wrestler is so sure the match should be stopped, or the referee is, after a bump. And I don't think it's making light of it, but we're moving on to some other aspects of the show, which is how they handled it. And I think you aren't in better hands than with Moxie and MJF with live mics with extra time to fill. I mean, that was a good situation. Obviously, you know, at first Excalibur went and plugged upcoming matches for Rampage and Dynamite. But if you've got an angle and you've got to call an audible in terms of how it plays out, MJF teasing a cash-in, taking off his shirt, rolling out of the ring, getting in Regal's face, all that stuff. I don't know how much of that was going to happen anyway, but clearly they had extra time to fill and had to wing it, and you're in good hands with Mox and MJF in that regard.
Yeah, and even if part of that is Moxley trying to see how much he could get away with before the station has to shut the show off, because he went through four-letter symphony and all I heard was crowd noise, and then he got a couple through, and you know, again, end of the day, he audibled. He's like a quarterback where the headset goes out. He went to the play he knew best, and MJF followed suit, and it continued the story we heard at the beginning of the episode, and just kept it moving. So kudos to them on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So the match itself, Rich, was good up until the point that it had to be stopped. And I think, you know, Mox was going to win anyway. And so in that sense, I think we ended up where they were going to end up. How did you feel about the William Regal MJF promo earlier that laid the groundwork, set the stage for MJF to choose to cash in when Moxley was beat down. Of course, I think the circumstances of that would have been significantly different, because I think it would have seemed more cowardly of MJF to try to cash in on Moxley had the match gone the way it was supposed to, with probably 5 more minutes of action, maybe something after the fact with Hangman. I'm not sure. But it would have seemed like more of a cheap way to win the title, because Moxley was actually more beat down than he was. So the announcers tried to cover for that. But nevertheless, if we're confident that Moxley would have been more beat down, I think there would have been more resonance to MJF's decision to not almost have an easy win over Moxley, but instead choose to win it at Full Gear. My issue with all this is, do they want fans to cheer boo MJF? It's like within every promo, it seems like they're working really hard to get fans to boo MJF, and then he'll say something that turns the fans back in his favor. And the way the storyline is written, you know, in the end, MJF made the right choice, so they're taking fans on this ride, and I just don't know how to evaluate this. And I wrote this in my report at pwtorch.com. I don't know how to evaluate this, because I don't actually know what their intent is or where this journey goes. So I don't know whether to applaud the way they're telling this story or analyze be critical of the ambiguity or the conflicted feelings that continue to come up in this sort of almost ping pong game of emotions with MJF's character in recent weeks. Your thoughts, Rich?
I think this was a masterclass. I mentioned on Twitter that MJF, much to Buddy's chagrin, MJF is very similar. They released today a promo or trailer for the new Creed movie that Michael B. Jordan is also going to direct and star in, where the new antagonist in that movie is someone from his past someone from his past that he forgot and kind of owes where he is to. And that's very much what happened here. And, you know, we get this here. MJF was such a good promo that he's like, I got the email right here. And people in the crowd are like, show us the email, as he's pulling his phone out. So that already was one thing. And then the next thing I would say is, going into the story, this is now the third or fourth MJF origin story we've heard. And Regal put a light, as only Regal could, on the thing that was always sticking in my craw about most of his origins. It isn't that they're all valid. They all, or that they're invalid, I guess. They are all valid. But the thing is, there's always, as CM Punk pointed out, as Cody pointed out, and as Regal really underlined, those are good inspirations for you to continue to get where you got, but you chose the shortcuts. Your trauma didn't choose those shortcuts. You did. And so you can't complain about the consequences for those shortcuts and the way people see you. And I love Regal's, like, if you're going to be a villain, if you're going to be the devil, but don't apologize for being it. And if you have the guts, you know, take me out now. Because that line was Tony Schiavone. And when you cross that line, you either have to live by that or you're just a poser. And I love the rage and that leading to him showing that he's either going to be the man and beat Moxley 110%, as he mentioned, or he's going to do something heinous and still claim that he beat Moxley at 110%. So I like this. And I think the elimination of the cash-in, regardless of if they're going to posit him as a face or heel, is a great way for him to be seen as whatever he is now, because it's both. He cuts promos that people will boo. He gets massive ovations when he comes in. And I think they're riding both.
Do you think the intention is for MJF to walk out after the Schiavone attack, finally got fans to boo him, to walk out and get booed in Cincinnati, and then a few minutes into his promo, talk about his passion for being a pro wrestler and his just unwavering determination to be a star and a success, and to have fans suddenly start cheering him again? And boo Regal when he holds the microphone, and then have Regal talk about, hey, you were 19, I was 16. I was on the carnivals having to fight men, you know, much bigger and older than me, and I fought through it. Your path was easy. And then he kind of won over some fans at that point. Do you think that was mapped out with the intent for the crowd to boo MJF at the beginning, cheer him, and then sort of start to side with Regal afterwards? Or do you think there was some miscalculation or unexpected reactions to, especially MJF when he gets passionate about wanting to be a pro wrestler.
Regal was able to pull him back because when he even put the mic to his mouth, he was getting roundly booed, as you talked about. Again, pointing the side effect of it out, because he's right. When Regal talked about the beatings and bleeding and just crying every night and knowing I want to be a pro wrestler, and he didn't want that for a 19-year-old in, quote-unquote, today's world. He wanted him to take a safer path, a better path. And if you know Regal's history and you know the history of NXT and you know the history of the Performance Center and the allegations against Bill DeMott, that isn't a far stretch from the truth. And so him saying if an email is the only thing that kept you going and got you to where you are is great because you didn't have to suffer like I did. Again, it shows that guy as a villain still has a heart. He still had a line. He always had a line. He might insult Tony Schiavone. He'd never shove him. He might do nefarious things. Like he even mentioned he got a laugh out of the crowd. I think that helped turn him to and break the ice. He's like, I don't need to use brass knuckles. I just like hitting people with them. And so Regal did a great job of being the pendulum that allowed the motion and the emotion to swing. And so in doing so, it gave the fans license to cheer them both without needing a villain. It's just two arguments. Who do you believe? It's almost like a closing statement by two very accomplished attorneys.
All right. We've got a lot on this show to talk about, including an ROH World title match and a sit-down interview with Danielson and Wheeler Yuta, reacting to what happened with Daniel Garcia last week and much more. So let's take this opportunity to pause and introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and give out the phone numbers and move to the next segment. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Tuesday, October 18th, 2022. I don't get to say Tuesday very often on a post show, but Dynamite, as many of you are frustratingly finding out after the fact because you forgot, is not airing on Wednesday night this week. It is airing on Tuesday. Just got a message from someone who is kicking themselves right now and queuing up the DVR. Nevertheless, thank you for joining us, whether you saw the show or didn't. It is a rare non-Wednesday AEW Dynamite post-show here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show and the founder, editor, publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, predating the internet pretty much. I think a few universities were talking through email in the late 80s, but for the most part, predating the internet. And also the website, pwtorch.com, and the host of many podcasts, including this post show and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our Blue Logo show, which will feature the return of Todd Martin this week. I record The Fix with Todd every week, but it's been a while since he's been on a simulcast of The Fix with our flagship format. So that'll be fun later this week. We've got a lot to talk about. So be sure you're subscribing to the Blue brand and refreshing and looking for that later this week. And we've got business in front of us, though, which is to talk Dynamite with Pro Wrestling Torch columnist and the star of the VIP show that I'm part of called Everything with Rich and Wade. And that is Rich Fan. Rich, welcome.
It's a pleasure, as always. It's been a minute since I've been able to talk Dynamite with someone other than my main man, Travis, in the last 3 years or so, other than I think there was one time I did it to his chagrin and I had to duck the East Coast cast. But yeah, this is a rarefied air for me.
Travis is very possessive of you.
He is. I think it's just because we share the TV codes.
don't admit that. They'll come after you.
I mean, I didn't say what TV codes. If all right. They know, it could be like, you know, it would never be Disney Plus because I'm never going to go to the other side of the mouse. But, you know, HBO Max.
All right.
Warner can barely keep track of who works for them. They're not going to come after them.
Yes. So, Rich, great guest.
I say that, and like 5 minutes later, it's going to be gone. So
exactly. You're all going to be like, there'll be an error message. Rich, it's great. Normally, you are podcasting on Wednesday nights. And so I knew when we saw this pop up on Tuesday, it'd be a good idea to have you on the show. Before we get to our phone calls and talking more about Dynamite, tell people about the PW Torch East Coast cast.
Sure. So as we always say, it's not necessarily minivan friendly. There's two portions of the East Coast cast, the first of which being Travis and our main man, Cameron Hawkins, do the live portion where they and callers, much like with this show, will chop it up about the events of the week or events in pop culture, et cetera. And then myself and Travis on the VIP side of things will continue some of the conversation. Traditionally, talk a little bit Dynamite and how NXT flowed together. And then we'll go into his book reading and all sorts of neat things. But it isn't always just wrestling. We kind of jump into whatever the listeners want, as well as whatever we've gotten emails and phone calls about. So definitely check it out. If you want to go to eastcoastaudioshow@gmail.com, that's where we have emails, or eastcoastcast.com on anywhere you'd like to look social media wise. You can find us.
Excellent. All right, so let's give out the phone number here. I invite everybody listening to participate in the show via phone call or email. If you'd like to call, the number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on the switchboard and moves you to the top of our listing. Otherwise, you'll just be lost amongst the many who are calling and just listening, which is just fine. You can also email the show, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I'm sure a lot of people have were flipping channels during Dynamite and NXT tonight, a head-to-head battle. Rich, you and I talked about that on Everything yesterday at the top of the show, kind of speculating on whether this would be a, you know, I won't say meaningless, but, you know, not a particularly a vital turning point in the AEW-WWE dynamic if NXT edges out AEW in total viewership. I don't think there's much of a chance AEW loses the demographic battle. They're just stronger than NXT in that regard. They have a greater under 49 and under audience than NXT does. But I think the viewership battle is up for grabs this week. So some people flipping back and forth. Others probably watched AEW live and are now watching NXT, and some vice versa. But if you are among those who watched Dynamite live and then tuned into this show, we'd love to hear from you. Again, the number is 347-215-8558. We do anticipate hearing from our on-site correspondent, Justin, who is in the building, who can add some more details to what Rich conveyed through what Justin told him and other social media reports on what happened in the building with Hangman. I put up on our Twitter account, @PWTorch, you know, that I confirmed Hangman was legit injured. And it's fun. I mean, not that there's a ton of people saying this, but some people are like, you know, of course, you know, we're not that jaded, no shit, and that kind of thing. But, like, not everybody, you know, if you looked real to you, I mean, you have to consider the idea that there's a lot of people out there going, it's wrestling, everything is always fake, and this is a work. And it's sad that something like this can happen, and that's the response. You know, a lot of people just will be skeptical to the end that it was legit. You know, I have people whose opinions I trust in this business, or who I respect, I guess is a better way to put it. It's not a matter of trust. Who were sure, you know, the whole CM Punk Bucks Kenny thing was a work. You know, oh no, just wait, you just wait, you just wait. And, you know, I don't believe there's much of a chance that it was, to put it lightly. So this is one of those situations where if it had been worked to this degree or emulated, a shoot situation, you know, I think there'd be rightfully people would be upset, but the idea that people would be upset with just, you know, confirming what might be obvious to them is a little weird given it's pro wrestling. But as we said, if you're joining the show in progress, we did confirm at the top of the show through an AEW source who would know and wouldn't lie that Hangman was legit injured. And it was certainly the feeling on the scene in the building, but it was quite split. And it certainly wasn't 100% on social media. So we'll talk more about that, but we also will talk about the rest of the show. And I say we move on to that. So let's begin with Craig in Toledo, Ohio. Craig, welcome. Good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hi, I'm glad you guys noticed that that thing about Tony Schiavone on commentary when that happened. I noticed the same thing about Taz. Took his glasses off. And I'm a huge Taz fan, so I noticed that I was like, that was weird. And I'm wondering if all, like, the production things that were happening at the end where everything seemed to go haywire, all the hiccups, like the lights and the sound and everything, if you guys think that was going to be a clean finish or if you think there's going to be, like, shenanigans involved, like, the production.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to make of that, Rich. I was, you know, I'm frantically typing up my report as all this is going on while also trying to text people in AEW to get some details. But I noticed Mox made a comment about the show's falling apart because of mic. He can't get a mic to work, which it then worked. I don't think he knew it was working because we could hear him on TV, but maybe not in the PA. And then the lights went red briefly. So it's possible that was part, maybe the lighting was going to be part of an angle, but it also just could have been someone who was settled in and knowing what they were supposed to do, suddenly being discombobulated by having to kind of wing it in ways that they're not used to it.
Yeah, it seemed like everything was just a hair off. Like everyone was more focused on the stuff happening clearly instead of let's just get through these 10 minutes. And then they kind of woke themselves up, as you would in any traumatic event, and kind of got back to work. So that made a lot of sense to me. And with the lights, I figured that was, again, someone just kind of not necessarily falling asleep at the wheel, but not necessarily paying attention to, oh, okay, the cues we had set up aren't the cues we necessarily need. I didn't think, Craig, it was going to be a run-in, but I did think it might be with the celebration or whatever they were going to do at the finish of the match. That was going to be the indicator that maybe either MJF coming out or someone else from Stokely's faction was going to come out or something like that. But yeah, now it's interesting to see what and this isn't really, I'm sure no one's going to really want to ask that question, but I'd be very interested to see what was the direction they were going to go before this unfortunate series of events.
Craig, thank you.
Yeah, I also was thinking, wondering if you guys thought that something was coming with the Blackpool Combat Club because of the Regal thing. He might go with MJF maybe, and Wheeler Yuta is getting snippy. So I was wondering if you guys think that might be coming to an end here, coming up quick, and what your opinions are.
Rich, did you catch that?
Yeah, I did. I joked that Willie Utah was the Jan Brady of the Blackpool Combat Club. Because you could see as Renee's talking with Danielson about Garcia, he was getting more and more angry and doing like head shakes and stuff in the back. And again, because Renee is who she is, like, hey, I noticed you were seeming a little uncomfortable and didn't necessarily agree with what I was saying. And then he just let it rip. And to Craig's point about Regal, if you're not going to be a villain enough for him or a devil enough for the villain, I think if he does turn, that would be a good way to do it and undo the Combat Club. And the only reason I don't think it's necessary, though, for this story is MJF wants to do this in spite of the people who inspired him to wrestle, not alongside. That would be my only reason.
Craig, back to you.
That's it, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And, Rich, good luck with the emails, staying awake and everything.
Listen, I haven't done it in 7 years. Can't start it now. I figure just stick with the gimmick I got.
Thanks,
appreciate
thanks,
Craig.
It, Craig. Thanks, Craig. Rich, I want to ask you about the Wheeler Yuta thing. I was a little frustrated watching that because we've got the Danny Garcia decision to go against Blackpool Combat Club. And, you know, a week later, we already have dissension with someone else who's upset with Bryan Danielson. And I mean, it makes sense that you can tell a story that Danielson is favoring Garcia over Yuta because it's just Danielson shooting straight. It's his honest opinion. He really likes Garcia. And Yuta hasn't, in Bryan Danielson's eyes, reached that level yet, or he just doesn't think the same thing about him. And I can understand Yuta being upset by it. But I guess I just want a little more breathing space before I go from Garcia turning on Danielson to Danielson sort of being in a detached way disappointed because he thinks so highly of Garcia and that shaking up Wheeler Yuta. Because it seemed like if the choice was who's going to be Daniel Garcia's number one understudy, the fact that Garcia turned on Danielson and Yuta didn't makes Danielson look bad that he's saying such nice things in such sort of a detached way, dispassionate way about Garcia, who made a really bad decision, or an in Daniel decision, and you can see where Wheeler Yuta would feel like, hey, wait a second. Look at the choice he made. That should factor into how good he can be. And you're sitting here right next to me acting that way. To me, the emotion should be clear. I didn't like Garcia turning. I understand there's some rationale for it. But overall, I just think Garcia's a babyface was convincing, and I wish they stuck with that or went with that, however that played out booking-wise, and then go with it. But now they've added this other layer where now I'm not so sure how I feel about Danielson, even though I'm supposed to like Danielson and not like Garcia. Now I'm starting to think, well, Danielson was kind of insensitive, or if not a jerk, saying that right in front of Yuta, knowing what Yuta's accomplished, and that Yuta sees himself as sort of an equal and a rival to Garcia for Danielson's attention. It's compelling, but there's so many storylines with Danielson, especially, but in AEW, where you're just you think you're starting to understand how you feel about something, and then they throw a twist into it, and you just end up ambivalent ultimately, because you get caught so often siding with someone who then lets you down, or just gets a new layer gets thrust upon you storyline-wise so quickly. So I was kind of digesting that when watching it. What did you think?
I thought, looking at the dialogue, the one thing I enjoy about the BCC is Combat Club has always been honest with each other. And so, if anything, I saw Yuta in this role kind of not accepting one of the elder guys' reactions. And then, because they're a team of equals, also saying, which is very interesting to me, that he and Claudio would have seen through you, Garcia, but Danielson didn't. And so even that is, it's not even like he's the apprentice anymore or the white or green belt. He's a brown belt among black belts that has kind of earned that respect and attention. So it isn't like he can just be, he's not the quiet guy anymore. And for good or ill, when it comes to having that person, now that you've given them the green light to talk, you're going to hear their opinion. And in this case, the opinion was, this sucks. And this guy, like you said, Garcia clearly chose against the club, chose against Danielson's teachings, and cost Danielson the Ring of Honor title. And yet he's still gushing about how he's this amiable, just affable, outstanding wrestler that he wants to recruit. Football player, like if you're thinking about college football, and it's this recruit that's already at another school and already says, you're, I chose that school over your school. And you're just like, well, one of these days, maybe I'll get him. Like, no, the ship still sailed. I mean, I guess nowadays with the transfer rule, it kind of hasn't. But you get my
point. So who I sort of felt like I'm on a similar journey watching the segment with you. Who do you think they want us to side with on this?
I don't think they know, Wade. I honestly think, just like with Garcia, they don't know where they're going with this in terms of – I think they have an idea. I shouldn't say they don't know where they're going. I think they know where they're going, but they don't know who they want you to root for, which isn't very helpful. I think
that's not a big difference.
To me, it is. Because in the story, I think they know the beats that they want to hit and the result of it. But just like with MJF, there should be a result that you're cheering this guy or you're booing this guy. At the end of this, it's he wins the title or he doesn't. And while those are they should be together, I think in the journeys they're creating, in the case of Yuta and the club and Garcia and the Jericho Appreciation Society, it just seems like they need this, kind of like what we used to say about Raw. And in many ways, sometimes still say they needed this to fill this segment, and it was supposed to be meaty, but it's almost like that, lack of a better term, like it's fast food instead of good food. And so it looks appealing, but in the long run, to your point, it isn't necessarily giving you what you necessarily need.
Yeah, I think one of my generic and not 100% always applicable critiques of AEW is they don't let storylines breathe sometimes. And like, to me, this twist, I don't know. Maybe this is a bad example, because how do you wait for Danielson to react, and how can Danielson's reaction not upset Yuta? But I just want to settle in. I'm already not thrilled that we went from Garcia seeming like he just was clearly this guy at the core who didn't like what Jericho was doing for weeks, was telling Jericho, win clean, win the right way. And then just out of nowhere, I didn't buy it. I just didn't buy it, that he suddenly would be this bad guy siding with Jericho. I haven't heard from him yet why he chose that. So to me, especially on this week's show with so much going on, just save the sit-down with Danielson and Yuta for a week or two from now, and let's instead hear from Garcia maybe next week, and then Danielson and Yuta the week after. I might have been okay then with this twist. I guess I'm at the point where I want to hear Garcia's rationale on Dynamite and Danielson reacting after he gets more information. And Danielson he felt a little too just emotionally detached from what should feel like a betrayal, and that normal human emotions would not be rationally talking about what a potential he had, but it'd be upset with the choice he made on a more kind of human emotional level instead of that analytical, well, you know, it's a shame because of what he's going to lose. So anyway, that was my thought watching that. That stood out to me. Okay, so let's give out the phone numbers again and then keep rolling through calls. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. Area code 803 has done that. 803, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Joseph from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph. Good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from Columbia. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I really enjoyed it. Sad about the Hangman Adam Page situation. You never want to see that. MJF, as always, was a fantastic promo. But my question is about the women. Now, to preface this, I am a Toni Storm fan. I was there in Columbia when she debuted. I lost my mind. But with her going clean over Sheeta tonight, and there's constantly women that get greater reactions than Toni all the time and can work just as well as her in the ring, what does that say that about Toni Khan, how much confidence he has behind her? And do you think she's going to keep going forward in the next couple of months as champion, or is she going to lose anytime soon? Because to me, I like her. Like I said, I love her, but so many other women get greater reactions all the time and can work just as well. So I was just wondering about that.
Rich, what do you think?
I'll gently disagree. As I put on Twitter tonight, I see Toni Storm very much as a Moxley-type character for the women's division. While some women may get better reactions, I think she has the ability to wrestle with everyone on the roster and get something out of them in a way that they haven't before. And she's really, again, another adult in the room that's just out there wrestling, making demands, similar to what Moxley was saying, like, this is on my back, or Jericho with his new contract extension as well. You know, I'm a leader. I'm the elder statesman. You see the same thing with Toni. I don't want to be interim champion. I want to see myself as champion because I'm talking to the women in the back. I'm doing the things that need to be done. I'm kind of pulling all of this together. And I think giving a little more personality, like I love Hikaru Shida, but I did not like the avenue they were taking her down on Dark and Elevation, where in order to get a rise out of the crowd, she has to rip her top off and have her bra out. Like, that makes no sense to me. A wrestler like her should be able to go out there and just be awesome. And then to further that storyline for tonight's wrestling event, to have Riho come out, who was one of my favorites in the first year and a half, 2 years of AEW. She, you know, I put on Twitter, she's Riho Mysterio, because she would come out to a cold crowd that wouldn't know who she was. And by the end of that match, they would be in love with her and cheering vociferously for her to win. And I saw that happen again and again and again. And then when she came here to Pittsburgh, a notoriously dead town, quote unquote, the place lost it for her when she was wrestling. And so I think adding her to the mix, if anything, might be another one of those additions that can make things an ensemble instead of just, you know, I don't want it to be Toni Storm and Friends. I want it to be an ensemble cast because we've seen the person in Friends. We see Britt Baker in Friends. We've seen early on when they tried to make, Britt what she wasn't as far as like babyface superhero, that didn't work. And so my hope is that when you add in someone like a Toni, that makes things a little better. And my fear is, you know, honestly, I don't want Saraya. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
And I always say the New Yorkers, I want to say Saraya because Saraya, I hope she isn't the CM Punk of this group. where it's a lot of bombast and leads to friction.
I thought this was one of the just stronger overall segments at showing the strength of AEW's women's division right now. I'm a fan of Toni Storm. She's a work in progress in terms of how she's being featured and promoted. But to have her and Riho and Saraya and then the whole crew with Britt Baker all out there, it felt like a robust women's division with women who are – it's not amateur hour with them, any of them. I mean, you know, there's a reason that Hayter and Baker, but not Rebel, are the, primary wrestlers in that group. But that felt like this is a collection of some of the biggest acts of the last 3 years. I mean, you know, Thunder Rosa wasn't there. Nyla Rose wasn't there. I mean, there's others who have been a big part of AEW. It's not the complete list, but I thought it was a little bit of a nice flex by AEW of some of the strong heels and baby faces they have right now. And so that was a step up from some of the stuff I think that we've been seeing lately on Dynamite and Rampage. There's some things that I just think weren't quite ready for Dynamite, and this looked like a group that is. I will throw back to Joseph. Any follow-up on any of that?
I never thought about it that way. The viewpoint of Tony being, you know, kind of like the women's version of like a Mox type. It's a really interesting viewpoint that I appreciate. But besides that, good show. Thank you guys for everything. And I will just say, I don't want Saraya fast-tracked immediately. But please don't put the title on her I like too much. That's all I'll say. But thank you guys.
Yes.
Have a good night.
Great. Thanks, Joseph.
You too.
I want to let our inside correspondent, Justin, know you didn't push once. So I don't know if that means you're just waiting to be ready and we shouldn't go to you. I messaged you on this, Rich. Or if he...
Oh, see, my technology has failed me, Wade. So yes. If I at some point fall out, it's because my computer did the whole screen, like the desktop whole thing disappeared. So I can't see anything right now.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, that's good to know in case I'm trying to communicate with you and you're like, and I'm like, why isn't Rich responding? So Justin, if you're ready for us as our on-site correspondent, push one on your keypad and then we'll know. But otherwise, I assume you're just kind of getting ready. Oh, look at that. He pushed one. Okay. So I want to let other callers on hold to know that we'll get to you next, but I want to bring Justin on, who was in the building tonight. Justin McClellan, thank you for taking time to talk to us after a newsworthy Dynamite.
Yeah, sure. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Let's start with you just kind of describing what you saw with Hangman Page after the King Kong Lariat and just, you know, be an eyewitness and convey to us, because the camera showed the ref checking on him, the doctor coming in, Hangman being rolled over onto his back, or the result of being rolled over, and he was moving his right arm. But after that, they did not show Hangman any longer. And I know Rich has conveyed a little bit of what he heard from you and on social media, but give us the more comprehensive eyewitness observation of what happened in that segment and also the mood of the crowd.
I was far enough away, it was hard to see what he was moving or if he was moving. He was kind of surrounded by people, so it was difficult to see. I was sitting, like, directly across from the wrestlers' entrances, somewhat elevated, so I didn't have a close-hand view. They brought the gurney out pretty fast. They took down, I think, the lowest rope. A lot of people thought it was an angle for kind of an embarrassing long time, in my opinion. Like, I was pretty sure right away it was serious, especially, you know, when they stopped the match. That's just not AEW style, but, you know, there were a lot of catcalls at first. I think when that gurney came out, people finally started to take it seriously.
Yeah. Describe how they got him out of the ring. I know they loosened the bottom rope, and, I don't know what you got from your vantage point, but can you talk about that a little bit?
I mean, they loosened the bottom rope. They brought a backboard out. That was Moxley was sort of pacing around. At first he was like agitated. Then he actually like got on his knees, like he was praying with the referee for a while. So, I mean, it was kind of scary to me, at least. I mean, it was a lot like you see on the football field or anything when the guy gets injured. Like, you know, they roll out the backboard. They're, you know, fast but also careful, if that makes sense. And just they wheeled him away. They wheeled him down or up the – not up, but where the entrance ramp was, they, like, wheeled him out, you know, parallel to that.
You said the mood and the crowd changed when the gurney came out. Did it seem like the crowd was able to recover from what happened and trying to calibrate what they were seeing and get back into the MJF tease that he was cashing in and the Moxie promo, or was there still sort of a pallor over the crowd? Trying to think of the right word, like where just the mood was different.
So did Moxley's F-bomb make television?
We got a lot of the crowd noise that they do instead of bleeping.
Okay.
Yeah, but we didn't hear that. We knew he was saying naughty words. Yeah.
Yeah, basically Moxley said, something like, who is this effing kid, you know, the full word. And kind of brought the crowd back because there was like a gasp. Like, you know, they knew he wasn't supposed to say that. And, so it brought them back around, I think. I don't think it had the end angle with MJF had the impact it would have had with not the injury, because that interview between him and Regal got over very well live. And people were seriously behind him at that point. And I think people were still distracted. They were still pretty focused on it, but I don't think live it quite had the impact it would have had without the injury.
Yeah. I assume, you know, things would have played out quite a bit differently in the lead up to that the tease of the cash in and the promo. But the tease of the cash in and the promo itself, I think, were probably pretty close to what they had in mind. But there would have been a different setup. I do think if you're Moxley right now and you know you're going to get bleeped and you're saying some key phrases, they aren't really good about isolating just the one word for a bleep. So when you start introducing words that are going to get edited or censored, is a better way to put it, you're losing all the words around it. So it's probably better not to go there at this point for key lines for the TV audience. But that's more of a sidebar comment. Rich, do you want to ask
Who knows? I mean, I don't know. Do you think, you know, he was sort of having to vamp and making stuff up on the fly. So I don't know if it probably in this instance. You know, AEW definitely has a cursing problem, but I think in this instance, it probably just slipped out because he was, you know, trying to think of what to say on the fly.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. It doesn't negate the point that just in general, wrestlers have to realize the three words before and the three words after you drop an F-bomb are not going to be heard. So if it's important for the million plus watching at home to know what you're saying, you have to be cognizant of the fact that no one's going to hear it if you throw an F-bomb in the middle of it. That's my only point. I'm not like saying, oh, Moxley is, you know, that it's not understandable in the moment why he might lose sight of that, but more just sort of a general comment. Rich, is there anything you want to ask Justin about the show tonight, about what we've already talked about as a follow-up or a different topic?
Yeah, sure. I guess two quick ones, and then my last one will be an easy plug. The first is, when it came to the Jericho match for the Ring of Honor title, how did the fans take to Dalton Castle? Because I know you and Chris have gone to a couple Ring of Honor shows in Ohio. And what about Jerry Lynn? Did folks kind of remember or kind of see him as the star he was rather than just a producer?
Yes. I thought this was a very intelligent crowd who seemed to know everybody. Like, I was worried for Dalton coming out, you know, he hasn't had a lot of TV time in Ring of Honor or the new Ring of Honor on AEW. So, and Jericho was very over because of the song and everything and being Chris Jericho, but people were really into Dalton too. I mean, he got a really good entrance, which I think helped, you know, with the giant throne and everything, but people seemed to really know him and reacted to him. It was during the match itself. It was pretty much a 50-50 crowd between the two. And they did know who Jerry Lynn was, and they understood he was a former Ring of Honor champion himself and part of this, you know, Ring of Honor champion Hunter storyline.
Excellent. And this one, I actually have another question I want to ask, just because I know Wade
sure.
will want this for his records. In the ratio of interviews, who was better received, Alex Marvez or Renee Paquette?
Oh, Renee, by like 100 to 1.
No.
One day, Alex, you'll get there, buddy.
Big guy.
Like, I mean,
people
popped when there was a big pop when Renee was on the screen. I think Alex, you know, who did Alex interview? Darby?
Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Darby.
Okay.
Did Jay Lethal turn back since he turned? I honestly, it's an honest question. Like, I thought they teased Jay turning, and now he's still anti-Darby hanging out with Sanjay. Am I remembering wrong?
No, they shook
I was
hands.
Trying to remember, too.
You're right. They shook hands.
So I don't know. I feel like I need to review my memory here, or I missed a chapter, or they forgot. I don't know what was going on, or changed their mind. Go ahead, Justin.
Speaking of your memory, I heard what you said about Garcia. He did give an explanation for his actions on the last Rampage. Basically, he came to the decision that, you know, sports entertainers will always triumph over wrestlers. So, I mean, he did give an explanation. They probably should have replayed that or highlighted that on Dynamite for people who only watch Dynamite.
Yeah. More than half the people who watch Dynamite don't watch Rampage. It's part of spacing things out. This is the week in front of a million plus. You have Garcia has been a major thread on Dynamite. And you know what you can do is show a segment of what he said as a way to make people not watching Rampage regret it and go, oh, you know, if I want to see the full thing. But you can't not update people, 600,000 people who didn't watch Rampage on that explanation, or even better yet, just have Garcia do it on Dynamite and space out the storyline better. There just shouldn't be major, frankly, until they get ratings up, there shouldn't be major storyline developments on Rampage, but if there are, they absolutely need to include that on Dynamite. Otherwise, people are going to be left missing, you know, more than half their audience is going to be missing a major chapter. I'm befuddled by this practice by Tony Khan when it comes to the Dynamite Rampage dynamic. And I want a better explanation than that, by the way, too, from Garcia. Like, I want to know, was he truly contemplating, was he sincere in not wanting Jericho to cheat, and then he sort of came around, and can he explain that in a believable way, as opposed to just sort of a platitude of, I always knew sports entertainers were better. That doesn't really address the week-long journey we were on, where he very believably seemed to be wanting Jericho to win the right way, which now is a storyline that's been usurped by Regal and MJF, which, by the way, is a little too similar to this other major storyline, but that's a whole other topic. Now, Rich, go ahead, ask it, Justin.
Yeah, my last question was, I think, Justin, you're quite the amazing and astute call-in artist. Where could folks find you in other places here at The Torch if they were so inclined?
Well, it just so happens I'm the co-host of a daily cast program that comes out every Thursday with the esteemed Christopher Maitland called Wrestling Coast to Coast. We cover independent wrestling around the country and beyond. So, you know, usually we're talking about wrestling in front of 500 people instead of, you know, 5,000, but we have a good time, and I think you'd have a good time listening to us.
So search PW Torch. It's a PW Torch daily cast. So search PW Torch on your podcast app to subscribe, or visit our website for links to it, pwtorch.com. Go ahead, Rich.
I was going to say, not only, you know, you don't have to know these guys for over 20, almost 24 years, my God, to know that they're a good team. So happy to have them over on the daily cast side of the house.
Justin, I've got a few more topics to ask you about. I know it's really rich, but I want to cover a couple other things here, if you've got time. You cool with that?
Sure, absolutely.
Awesome. One, I just want to tie ribbon around the Regal MJF segment. I want to know what you thought of it, and I want to know what your emotions were watching it when it came to, you know, are you rooting for MJF to succeed or for him to fall on his face? And I talk also about the crowd and how it's hard to tell on TV, like, what percentage are actually cheering MJF, what percentage were booing and catcalling Regal, but then started cheering Regal. I want to get a sense of if the crowd is on a roller coaster, or there just were a few vocal fans who picked sides and stuck with that side.
I would say the crowd was very pro MJF from the moment he came out. There were a few vocal haters. Oh, sorry about that. There were a few vocal haters, but I would say at least 75% were very pro MJF and really hanging on his every word. Like, it was sort of he gave a very long promo, but you could really, you know, people weren't heckling or cheering. They were really listening to what he was saying. Like, I got, like, pretty much the whole gist of he got this email, and, you know, it was sort of insulting, but also drove him. And the incredible thing was, like, you know, people for a while are chanting at Regal that he screwed up by not signing MJF, and Regal was able to turn them with his delivery. So I think people were just kind of in awe of both of their performances in a positive way. Like,
I assume that my feeling as a crowd knew they were watching something special with two great orators of this business who are pulling from real life in a way that applies to the story that they're intending to tell on television. And also, I think it had the aspect of a peek behind the curtain that you know, people almost, it's almost like you're at a one man show and, you know, MJF and Regal are sitting on stage and someone said, "Hey, I hear Regal, you were at a tryout for MJF. Tell us about it." And you're getting to hear them talk about something behind the scenes, but it's on a TV show and it's relevant to where they're going. I mean, regardless of what I think about, I feel like too much of what MJF is doing, for my taste, feels like they're undecided about whether he's going to be heel or a face. They're undecided about how they want fans to respond. They're somewhat caught off guard by how the crowd is responding. Or if it's intentional, I still am not full. I don't feel prepared to judge what they're doing now until I see what the end point is, because I do feel like we heard boos when MJF came out, and then a pop when he talked passionately about wanting to be a pro wrestler, and then the crowd turns on Regal, who's the representative of the number one hometown babyface world champion later in the show. Is that really – do you really want to mix signals that much just so people can put in these Academy Award performances and these epic promos if it's working against the fans just getting to get behind a team or a wrestler or a philosophy or an outlook? And that's kind of where I'm torn by this. I think the performances were astounding, and of course the crowd was probably hanging on every word, but did it actually work towards the fans having feeling confident in the emotions that they have, and that there's not a headwind being created by some of the directions that they've been going, especially with MJF, including tonight with Regal? So those are some of my thoughts to catch you up, Justin, and to expand on some of my thoughts from earlier.
Okay, so, I mean, the vibe I got from the end was the crowd was actually more behind MJF by the end, because even though Regal was justified in what he said, like, they see this as an obstacle in their guy's way. Like, they almost like it humanized him in a way. I think they're like, oh, I get it. You know, like, he's really trying to show all these people who put him down that, you know, that he could succeed. And, like, oddly, he's painting himself as this underdog, I think, that people are getting behind.
Absolutely.
I do think, like, AEW has this problem. You know, it's like all these guys who are, like, trying to overcome their inner demons, like Daniel Garcia, and Jay Lethal was doing it for a little bit, and so it's kind of repetitive. And I do think, I mean, I think it's going to end up where MJF cheats to win anyway, and, you know, it turns out he was, again, the villain all along, which I don't think is what people want from him anymore.
Yeah. By the way, Rich, is that your hunch on where this ends up?
I think it's going to be him being the devil and using the ring at a time where you thought like you said before, he said he wanted to beat him straight up when he's 110%, use the ring, and then brag he beat him and beat him the way he needed to.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a compelling journey. Don't get me wrong. It feels my concern is it's overly complex. It's like, hey, if 3D chess isn't good enough, let's do, 6D chess or whatever. I don't think that's a thing, but it could be a thing. But it comes across like they're overthinking it and layering it. And I think it works in certain genres. I'm not sure it's ideal for pro wrestling. As compelling as it was in and of itself tonight, and it absolutely was. So that's just what I'm kind of thinking out loud and working through myself. Justin, talk about the reaction for the women's match. Sometimes we hear crowds aren't as into some of the women's matches. I felt this was sort of AEW putting their A crew out there for the match itself in the post-match with an interview beforehand backstage with Baker and company. What would be your takeaway from this event only in terms of how popular AEW's core women are?
I thought everyone in tonight got a very strong reaction. Again, it was a very split crowd between Toni Storm and Hikaru Shida, but they kept the crowd through the whole match, and we got some really big pops for all the run-ins, which are generally going to get pops. I was pleasantly surprised people remembered and were very ecstatic to see Riho. She hasn't been on TV for, I don't know, a lot. It feels like a long time, but people recognized her immediately and were very excited to see her. In general, I agree. This was kind of in a lot of the A crew. It was odd. Jade Cargill has a lot of ties to Cincinnati, and she only got that one little backstage promo where she's wearing a Cincinnati Reds jersey. So I think, and that got a huge pop when she showed up. So I think they missed the boat on not having her do anything.
Yeah, interesting. We've been talking about the reaction to Dalton Castle and whether the fans are familiar with him and the crowd. Liking Judas in that song. Just talk about the emotional ebb and flow in that match a little bit, because at first, if you aren't familiar with Dalton Castle, or really, how could you be if you're just an AEW viewer? You might not know exactly his character. It seemed like within a few minutes, the crowd was very much behind him, especially after the boys were diving out and Jack Swagger was playing it up as a heel. So if it was quote, a pro-AEW crowd and Dalton is this outsider, which goes against completely the story Jericho's telling, but you could imagine a crowd just sort of seeing it that way with someone like Dalton, who has not been strongly established in front of the million-plus main audience for AEW that tune in on for Dynamite. It seemed like Dalton and his boys won over the crowd as the match went on, in addition to those who were just on Dalton's side to begin with. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Dalton got the big, he got a pretty spectacular entrance, which I think helped. Immediately
made him seem like a star.
Yeah, but this is somebody special. He's got this, giant throne. And, he is charisma off the page. So I think that helped. And the boys, they were doing hard work. I don't know how much of, their antics with Swagger were on screen, but they were, it was a whole separate mini story between Swagger and the boys for pretty much the whole match. They stole his purple hat at one point. They were, beating mm-hmm. him. There were segments where they were the three boys had to hold one back from attacking Swagger. So I think the boys were very instrumental in their antics and people getting behind Castle and into the match as a whole.
Was there anything before Dynamite or after Dynamite that you can share with us in terms of Tony Khan coming out or other matches taped or anything like that?
They had an hour of Dark Elevation, pretty much mostly squashes. like there was one very good match between the Workhorsemen, who are Anthony Henry and J.D. Drake, who we've covered many times on Wrestling Coast to Coast on the Pro Wrestling Torch Daily Cast. And they fought hometown hero Brian Pillman Jr. and Griff Garrison, who are now, for legal reasons, just the Blondes, not the Varsity Blondes. And they had a probably like a 10-minute match, and it was excellent. So if that was a match I would go out of my way to see on Elevation. Eddie Kingston, he was in a squash. He got a monster pop. He got, I think, easy top three reaction of the night. And, I mean, some of that he was like, it was the second match, so, you know, he was like the probably the first major star we saw, but no, still, like, he was over huge. We got a Cesaro, Claudio Castagnoli fought QT Marshall. They had a very good 10-minute match. It was entertaining. Not much else. There was, you know, just a few other squashes. Tony Khan, he came out right before the show, just a quick rah-rah speech, you know, like, we're Cincinnati, some of the craziest fans around, and he, you know, he was so happy we were here to support the show. Afterwards, Moxley and Wheeler and Claudio just, you know, they did like sort of another rah-rah thing, and Nick Nemeth came out to take a giant swing, like a giant swing. I think 20 rotations or something like that, and, you know, just some hijinks to send the crowd home happy.
How did Moxley's pop compare to, say, Eddie Kingston's and others? What was the magnitude of difference, and how would you rank the top pops of the night?
Moxley was one far and away. People loved Moxley. He was super over huge. Two is probably Jericho. You know, Kingston, like I said, got a big pop. The Orange Cassidy and his crew got over pretty huge. I mean, the people were really into Death Triangle, too, especially doing the Zero Miedo chant.
Cool. Anything else, Justin, you want to share with us?
I did hear Craig's comment. It was, you know, the building, that is not a great building, and they did have some sound problems throughout the night on their speakers. Like, I couldn't tell, like, a lot of the enhancement talent's names throughout the early part of the show. It's too bad. Like, there's a smaller building they ran in last time that's on the University of Cincinnati's campus. It's smaller, but it's much nicer. And they didn't fill this building. I don't know if they got half full. So maybe they should think about going back there next time.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Cincinnati's own John Moxley in a world title match that got considerable hype the past couple of weeks, it's not a great sign. But you think it might have to do with the venue, the quality of it, or the neighborhood, or what? What might play into hurting attendance? Or do you think this just is AEW and at this point is just isn't, you know, selling out buildings?
I'm really not sure. It was a higher ticket price, I think, was one issue. It wasn't the first time in the area. They were in Columbus not that long ago, and Columbus is only like an hour drive from Cincinnati, so maybe they double dipped too soon.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Rich, you've been listening in. Is there anything else you want to close with in terms of a question or comment for Justin?
Yeah, I think for me, the one question I would have that remains with the whole show was, did you feel – this is an old Wade classic. Do you feel like what you got was worth the ticket price you paid? And what would be your suggestion for maybe a better venue for them to use?
My suggestion would be to come to Dayton, Ohio, so I wouldn't have to drive an hour. We have another center. But, yeah, I feel I got my money. Like, it was a weird vibe at the end with the Hangman injury, but that's nothing they could help. You know, that was out of their hands. And I thought it was a really enjoyable show up to that point. So, yeah, I got my money's worth.
Cool. Justin, thanks so much for your generous time tonight. Appreciate it. Look forward to your...
Absolutely.
Look forward every week to your contributions to the PW Torch Day cast lineup.
Great. Thanks.
Yep. Take care.
Be well, my friend.
All right. We are still taking calls. We're going back to our phone lines here. So if you are listening in and want to chime in, now is the time. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us if that works better for you. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, we're going to go to perhaps a Skype or international call. I see a bunch of ones. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. All right, so that is the wrong button to push. Let's go next to who is this? Grant in Detroit. Grant, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, how are you going to wait? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so I just had something quick today. So they finally acknowledging FTR being number one contenders for 9 months or something like that. And then we get a number one contender match with them. And I know you hate the name, but Swerve in Our Glory. So where do you see that going? Because I don't think – do you want to kill the claims like that they're getting big pops and FTR is getting big pops? Do you really want to confuse the fan base like that, or do you see them going back to Swerve in Our Glory?
Rich, what do you think?
Well, I think – well, to start that is the tip of the iceberg, because this also, in addition to talking about the title situation, they also mentioned Elite. They also mentioned or had CM Punk kind of like featured outside of the video game for once. So this was a really weird night for talking about things they usually haven't talked about. And so in this case, I think you have them beat Swerve in Our Glory, become number one contenders, and then you have something happened during that match that leads to a full Gear 3-way. So that way, if you don't want to have the Acclaimed lose the belts, something can happen. And the spectacle of a 3-way, which is a very NXT TakeOver type style thing, and in Prudential Center, I think that'd be well received between the Acclaimed, FTR, and Swerve and Strickland. Though, I must be honest, as I'm saying this, they're already restarting a story that they've ended and started and ended, like we were complaining about with something else regarding Garcia. Swerve and Keith are not on the same page. It's clear Swerve is acting like a heel, even down to, you may not know this, Wade, but Dax was on Twitter talking this week about how he spent the weekend with his family and his daughter colored his nails just because they were hanging out having a dad-daughter day. And then he went to go lift at the local gym, and I guess guys were looking at him funny for having painted nails. And yeah, he's like, well, you know, this guy would kick the crap out of you if I had to. And so having Swerve go up to him and say, nice nails, very, you know, it's a very, you know, heelish thing. And then even having Keith Lee tell him to tone down the animosity. So I think this is going to be a good test to see how far Swerve in Our Glory, ridiculous name or not, has as far as a sell-by date, because I think they may be breaking up sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it was interesting when, Lee telling Swerve to bring it down a notch, and Swerve was pretty hyped up. How do you feel about that? I mean, my take is we were just getting started with Swerve and Lee, and they should have, before we even tease Dissension, 9 more months together. You know, like, give them a full run as a tag team. It again goes to my argument that AEW just doesn't let things breathe. Everything, every week has to have all these developments. And sometimes you just want to let a team be a team and do their thing. I let a heel be a heel without ambiguity, let a turn be a turn without then teasing another turn that makes you conflicted in your feelings. There's just a density and a rush to add twists and turns. There's going to be a prudent reason to do it now and then. And maybe specifically Lee and Swerve are better off separate. But when it's part of a larger pattern, I have less faith that it's this specifically in this case, in this instance, a prudent choice, and more just sort of a propensity for impatient booking. I'm intrigued by how they go about it, but mostly I'm just happy we're getting down to business by having the former champs and the holders of three tag belts who, as of last check, were number one contenders, and all they could do is be made fun of by the Gun Boys that they don't get title shots despite their number one contendership status. I'm glad we're finally getting down to business, that they're going to fight each other, and we're going to have a tag team title match. As a result, it's just, I sit here and say too many things are developing too quickly on too many fronts, but FTR have just been treading water and in a way that doesn't make any storyline sense and reflects poorly in a meta way on the politics of AEW or Tony Khan just sort of making a decision. You know, I've talked about not being a fan of wrestlers expressing discontent and being disgruntled on social media. It's, you know, how people say get a room. To me, it's like go get in a room and work this out. Stop subjecting viewers of your TV show and people on social media to this discontent that isn't serving the fans, and just work it out. So I was happy to see that maybe we took a step in that direction. Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that some of it is the contrivance of, have you really not talked to each other in a week? And that's one of those aspects they got to figure out. And it's with any weekly wrestling or any sort of serialized show, like what happened in between where you guys can work these out. As an aside, I just cackled when Keith Lee stopped, looked directly at him and said, indubitably. Like, I feel like he's just going to find another random 3 to 7 syllable word just to throw out, you know, serendipitous. And I feel like I need my Google. Like, if Tony wants to make some money, get the Google Maps or Waze or whatever you use for driving to get a Keith Lee voiceover for it, like they do with Darth Vader and some of these other.
Yeah.
In 5 miles, you'll adroitly take a right.
Totally, yeah. I mean, from a safety standpoint, I'm not sure how advisable that would be, but it would certainly be entertaining.
The nature of your car needs to cease.
You will notice on the left quite the landmark, but I find it terribly overrated. I'm not coming up with big vocabulary words, but just asides from Keith Lee as you drive would be fun. Tour guide Keith Lee, in addition to giving directions. Grant, back to you for any follow-up comment.
That's all I had. I missed a lot of the show, so I got to go back and watch. Oh. But but I definitely
did you watch
that, and I was like,
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about that. Did you watch NXT, or you just had other things going on?
I just had other things going on. I'm gonna catch back up on both, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Good to hear from you, Grant.
Yeah. All right.
Take care. Yep. All right, we're getting late in the show, but you can still sneak in with a call if you haven't yet. 347-215-8558. And, of course, when you call, push 1 on your keypad so that we know you want to be on the show. Up next, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
I have a question on the MJF angle they're doing where he didn't want to cash in tonight and wanted to give Moxley plenty of time to prepare. Do you think this is very similar to what they're doing in Impact Wrestling with Bully Ray and Josh Alexander saying, Josh, don't worry, you'll see it a mile away when I'm coming?
Rich, your familiarity with that?
I am, and it's been interesting. I'd also say it's something that most companies have used at some point. Think about the way that, you know, One Night Stand with Cena versus Rob Van Dam, or any other person that had Money in the Bank, and they said, you know, instead of, trying to knock you out, I'm going to tell you when I'm doing it and tell you how I'm doing it. I think with the Bully Ray one, the story's a little different because Bully Ray also has the addendum of being kind of like the old war horse that's coming back for one long run. He's been a champion. We've seen him as a Quadzilla? I can never remember what, when he was more svelte. I think it was Capzilla because he'd always show off his calves.
Yeah.
In the case of MJF, he's trying to climb that mountain. He's trying to prove through all of these feuds, whether it was with CM Punk or Cody Rhodes or now with Moxley, and by I guess other way around, Regal by proxy Moxley. You know, I deserve to be where I'm at. And that's a story that any company, any sport, the brash rookie who is just overconfident and is trying to prove he belongs because of past, you know, think about every time I look at MJF, and Brian, you really brought this out of me. I think of if Miz was believable as a heel, all of the trauma he talked about getting locked out of the bathroom and everything like that when he became WWE champion, there was that short time where we all believed it, and it was, oh, yeah, I can see why this guy has a chip on his shoulder. Whereas with MJF, that thing's existed from the time he's been in wrestling. He's always had this, whether it was when you look at what he was doing in the independent scene or when he went to MLW, he always had a story for why he was the way he was. He just also happened to be a bit of a jerk, so he didn't really care.
All right, go ahead, Ryan, with your next topic.
I have a second question on MJF. Talk about this mystery tryout match, I guess that was like in an empty arena. Do you think WWE will ever release any of these tapes of like the major wrestlers that wrestled in these empty arenas? I think maybe Kelly Klein did one, Mandy Leon. So is it like the top woman wrestlers I know that might have done these? But do you think they could like maybe release some of this footage one day?
I mean, it'd be fun if they included it, say, in, you know, a documentary type feature for Peacock. You could do an interview. For MJF, like it depends on if he goes to WWE, and I'm far from convinced he's going to, but I'm not convinced he's not either. But if he did go in there, you could see them wanting to talk about his origin story and make it clear, kind of like with Cody, that, you know, you might know him from this show, but he actually is a WWE original in this sense. And, you know, bring some of that footage out. I assume they have not only had tape rolling, so to speak, but have saved that. So it'd be fun. I mean, I don't think, you know, there's a large audience for it in and of itself, but I think incorporating it into a video package or documentary would be cool. Rich, what do you think?
Yeah, I think much like we were talking on everything yesterday, AEW is doing the docuseries. I always enjoy WWE's docuseries, and if it's like a Hidden Gems or trying to think of someone who would be a really good host that's in that ecosystem right now, the kind of guy, I think Trish Stratus, if it's going to be all women or Lita or someone like that, and just through who these people are, not necessarily with like a sit down with them, but doing voiceovers with a woman wrestler that you would respect. I think that'd be really cool.
Rod, what else for us?
I have a question on Maria. They did a video package on the Kingdom. Can you picture maybe doing a match or two? Because I think she really would bring some star power to the division since she's been on reality TV and sort of like a female Miz. And maybe she's not the greatest in-ring competitor, but she definitely has one of the biggest names in wrestling, I believe, just due to all her outside projects.
David Bryant wrote an editorial for PWTorch.com this week on AEW the argument that AEW is featuring too much Ring of Honor. And one of the aspects of it isn't that Ring of Honor in and of itself isn't a brand that should be acknowledged on AEW TV, although you can make that case and say that in and of itself is a negative. But even if you don't, there's an aspect of watching just Dynamite, and that there's a lot of people who watch Dynamite. They're not on social media constantly. They're not even watching Rampage. They aren't super familiar with Ring of Honor. And they watch Dynamite, and there's all these wrestlers who they've been invested in who aren't getting consistent TV time or disappear, you know, for you know, whatever happened to Ricky Starks, for instance. No update on that. You know, there's like Miro. What happened to him? There's – so I could go on. I mean, But yet, suddenly, there's these video packages on an embassy, and there's this new faction, and there's this, and all these characters from Ring of Honor. And so I think for people who are familiar with Ring of Honor, they think, oh, this is cool, and there's wrestlers who they're fans of. And under other circumstances, they're good additions to any roster, or, you know, maybe in particular AEW in 2022. But when it's just constantly being shown wrestlers and factions that you're not familiar with and you haven't been introduced to them in the way that fans are typically used to getting introduced to wrestlers, but they're just thrown into an angle and a quick video package or a recap from Excalibur, that can be a negative. I'm not sure how I feel about Maria's star power at this point in 2022 with the type of fans that AEW still needs to win over. I don't look at her at being at the level that Ryan posited as a possible framing of her in terms of what she could do for the division. So I kind of did a little sidebar editorial there, but that jumped out to me when I was watching the segment with them, with Mike and Maria. Rich, your thoughts on any or all of that?
Sure. I think looking at Mike and Maria and everything with the Kingdom, I was hoping that they would also get Vinny. But it seems like, you know, rumors for Sissy might be going elsewhere. So I think the OGK with those three works. Maria, if she wants to wrestle, I think she does better what she's doing is being the manager and being the queen, the woman behind the throne, and also helping women assert themselves and being a voice for them in the back on how to assert themselves. Because regardless of where she's been in her career, Maria is known for being a person that advocated for herself and for stories she believed in, and for her and her husband, to the point where her old boss made it seem like being an assertive woman in a partnership with a spouse means that your spouse must be in some way cuckolded. Mm-hmm. Just disgusting. So I think, to your point, if she did wrestle, if she didn't, I think doing what she is happy with and can be capable of is the most important thing. And I am also personally happy that she isn't anywhere near the Good Brothers, because that means they don't have to do the Maria cam and get that really awkward thing going again.
Ryan, anything else you want to add before we move on?
Final questions on Dalton Castle. That big entourage that he has, or it is people that always go with him, or it is just locals, because I thought that might be the exception to the rule that he might just have his guys go with him everywhere he goes.
I think they're guys who go with him wherever he goes, at least the main ones, because, I mean, there's a lot of orchestration and pageantry that needs to be memorized. I think some of the people who formed the Human Staircase might have just been, you know, people on you know, available locally. Rich, do you have special knowledge in that way or a hunch at least?
Yeah, so I don't have a PhD in boyology, but I do know a good bit about Dalton. So, yeah, he has the twins, clearly. So you saw their Twitter handles come up when they were the main at his side. And one thing we didn't mention when Justin was on here, it was a good thing Dalton came along, because without Dalton Castle, they wouldn't be able to use any of those thrones they made for Cody. They'd just have to stay in the warehouse. So that was a great usage of some of that equipment. In terms of the boys, though, the two main boys, the twins, I can never remember their names, forgive me. They've been there. I think there's three or four other quote-unquote boys that have done a lot of Ring of Honor when those guys were doing independent shows, when it was kind of in the death knell, so that's like five or six. But the rest of them, you could tell the first phalanx. Again, I'm using another I'm going full Keith on y'all. The first phalanx of boys that you saw didn't even know when to move when the camera was coming. Like, they were just jumping out of the way, but then you could see the closer you got to the throne, the more organized and orchestrated it was as they were going. So that's another funny tip as to who were the people that were local talents and who were people who has or even have been local talents that he's used before in his act.
All right, cool. Ryan, thanks as always.
Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. All right, 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 if there's something we haven't talked about yet or you want to chime in on something we already have. Up next is area code 610. Go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Chris from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. go Phillies. for what it's worth, Brandon and Brent Tate are the boys. So,
thank you.
I just wanted to mention, I think the best match tonight was by far Hikaru Shida and Tony Storm. I know some of it might have gotten lost since it was in the first hour, and, you know, AEW doesn't really focus on the women, but I was really impressed by it, and I just think that the division itself now is pretty darn good, and I just wish it got a little more airtime. Maybe, you know, two matches might be good, you know. But I am also hoping that Paige comes out okay. But I don't know what your thoughts were. You might have already mentioned it, but I just wanted to mention how much I loved that match.
Yeah, I thought it was hard-hitting, rock-solid. It was not super long, but it contributed to my comments earlier, Chris, that I thought that this was one of the better I think this is one of the better women's segments overall in terms of AEW kind of flexing the strengths of their division. Rich, go ahead with any thoughts on the match itself. I'm not sure that we heard from you in terms of the quality of the match, even though it wasn't super long. And I know, and I'll add this too, because Chris brought it up. A lot of people want to see two women's matches on Dynamite, and I think Tony was certainly open to that at one point, and he just didn't have. And you know how much of this is the fault of AEW not you know it's a self-fulfilling prophecy or it's a problem that is created by AEW's lack of commitment or bad scouting or putting women in a position to not hold numbers in matches when not a lot of legwork was put into getting them over and giving them a storyline. But there are times where Tony has, you know, given up sort of that obligatory, almost ceremonial segment to the women near the bottom of the second hour, but not a lot of other legwork other than a few select women now and then. But I am not, I have said this before, it is not Tony Khan's obligation to give equal time to women or two segments to women. I think it is a meritocracy. And if women get over with the crowd, with their ring work and their promos, I just don't think Tony's going to hold back on having three or four women segments if the talent assembled delivers in that way. But I also don't think he should just go to two segments out of any kind of obligation or social pressure. I just think those who deserve to be on TV should get TV time, relatively blind to gender, with the idea being it obviously it's a whole separate division and a certain amount of attention should be paid to it consistently to strengthen it. Because if you are saying, well, we don't have anyone over, so we can't do two segments, that means you should put more work into getting them over so that you can have consistently two segments. Rich, you're done.
Sure. I think the women's division has been something that's been clearly maligned for those reasons you stated. As it stands now, they have the kind of the crew to carry as many matches as they need. Clearly, right now in North America, at least, WWE still is the standard when it comes to the number or quality top to bottom from row A to row Z of women wrestlers, whether it's through their main roster or main roster and NXT. But with the return of Riho from her injury, with the addition of Toni Storm, with the ascension of alongside Britt Baker, her crew, and then also, I think both Jamie and Reba, because I think Reba went from a joke when they first came in. The problem with AEW was you had too many Rebas and not enough Jamies. So what I mean by that is you had the Bunny, you had Ford, you had what you didn't know with 99, and now it's a good mix where it isn't this, did you hire these people because you want them to be entertaining or did you want people to actually wrestle? And now you have a good mix where people can go in there, they can mix it up, and that's why I argue again with the original caller at the beginning of this show. Tony, especially with her experience in WWE, Stardom, and elsewhere, can wrestle anyone in any style and make them look good. And not in a mechanic sort of way, in a, I'm a professional at my job. So it's not like she has to do it in the undercard. She can be the champion and make all of her opponents look great in a way that maybe Nyla Rose had to grow into, in a way that maybe Jade Cargill is learning, in a way that even Britt Baker can't do, because sometimes not through no fault of her own, she can be the sun or the this thing that sucks the oxygen out of the room just because she's so much better at it than some of her contemporaries. And so as you develop some of these other women, that's, my hope is you can have those second matches and build those second matches and have videos and sit downs with JR or maybe sit downs with Renee. And it can be a Bechdel test instead of, you know, some of the silliness of I'm mad because you got my man mad or something stupid like that. And so the more they can do that, the better they'll be. I think you mentioned a few weeks ago, Tony moved the matches out of there. And I also know I saw this on Brandon Thurston's Twitter feed. They moved him out of the death spot, and they're doing well. And then they move him into the death spot, and it's the death spot again. So I don't quite know what to make of that. And I'm sure Mookie and Tony and his analytics team are trying to figure out they know the where's and the why's for behind that. But when you have two, and you have a two-hour show, and you have another hour with Rampage, you can figure it out, especially now with the roster they have. Because you're sending people, like, we could have had Athena out here. We could have had, you know, whatever, Thunder Rosa is healthy, whatever they need to figure out with her. And then, of course, the ace in the hole is having Bushiroad seek out visas and working permits for the women of Stardom to kind of pop in and out in North America. And, you know, for their sake, they would hope with them and not just on their own tours.
Chris, anything else you want to add?
That last part would be amazing, Rich. The only other thing was actually, I was wondering, did anybody hear anything about Thunder Rosa? Because I don't know. There's been a lot of non-talk about CM Punk and the Bucks, but kind of radio silence on Thunder Rosa. So I wasn't sure what was going on there. And thank you very much. I'll listen off the air.
Great. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Call again. I know she talked about her injury, her back injury, in a YouTube video. So that was the last I saw about that, that she's been doing physical therapy sessions 6 weeks after her injury and attributing her part of her ability to recover to not traveling. But that's actually been a key for her to just get things right. So that's what I've heard. Have you heard anything different or in addition to that, Rich?
No, that's been it. And then also Tony's been pushing – Tony Storm, not Tony – we have so many Tonys in that company now. Tony has said she, you know, in a recent interview this week, she wants to put to bed, much like Moxley did. That's why, again, that came to mind so easily to me. She wanted to put to bed the interim nonsense as soon as possible and just be champion. Yeah. So the sooner Thunder Rosa heals up, the sooner she can smoke her, basically. And Thunder Rosa, to her credit, you mentioned she's been doing interviews, and she's also been doing YouTubes and other things like morning shows where, you know, it's like, okay, it's like that person that everyone is like claiming is not putting the PTO in the right way. Because they're like, well, you said you couldn't do this, but then we see you in the roller coaster, and you said if you had whiplash, why would you get on a roller coaster? So if you're at a morning show and you're doing all these things, how is your back not hurting for that? And it's getting awkward. You know, the woman's hurt. She says she's hurt. Deal with it. We'll roll through it. But the sooner they get this amended, the better. Because as we saw with the CM Punk and Young Bucks, Kenny, they can move from interim to champ when they want to. Now, that has been established. So if it does magically become no longer interim at some point, we'll be aware of that too.
It got lost a little in the certainly the ending of Dynamite and other things happening on the show. But you know, Thunder Rosa's out, and you still got Baker in sort of a passive aggressive way taking a dig, going, you know, she's not coming. I mean, it fits her heel character. There's plausible deniability, but like we all know, she's not. I mean, this is not her words, but it's essentially saying she's not coming back. Let's just stop this interim stuff. And yeah, it does have a little bit of the the Moxley ring to it, but with a different tone, because it's been more forward facing, you know, the legit heat between those two groups or those two women in particular. All right.
Right.
It is time. I am excited to hear Javier give his take on the happenings tonight. Javier, welcome. This is PW Torch contributor Javier Machado.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Rich. Rich, was this your first time hearing it?
It is. I haven't been able to listen to Dynamite, so I'm usually doing the show with Travis, so I wouldn't listen to the Dynamite post show. That I was not ready for that. When Wade said, all right, I was like, are we going to the emails? I feel like he usually would do this a different way. And then the music hit, and I was like, holy crap, this is a big outfit. Javier got the whole hook up here.
If you haven't noticed, Javier, listening to my shows is not a big thing necessarily for people who do a lot of other podcasts. So you can we can have your music going for a year, and people end up surprised by it. But I sympathize with podcasters not always listening to everybody else's podcasts.
And I got crap for not being caught up with Darren's podcast, man.
I know.
Rich got away scot free.
Listen, if someone asks I will just tell them, listen, I'm on negative sleep as it is. I can't do it.
What was your opening question, Wade? Forgot already.
I just said I'm looking forward to hearing your take on things. So I want you to kind of lead the way. I figure you've got certain top topics after listening to us talk for an hour, 40 minutes here, or more than that.
Well, I'm going a lot harder on that, Brian Danielson. I still got to remember Brian Danielson, segment. I think this is like the first time in a while that I've completely checked out of a storyline, because the amount of brain power that you got to devote to, you know, the whole thing with Daniel Garcia, the explanation of, I did it because it's sports entertainer, which is something that's already passed its sell by date. Danielson sitting there with Wheeler Yuta, and it's essentially like, you know, talking about this girl you were flirting with, and then, you know, you're trying to get her away from her boyfriend, and then she had enough and she slapped you, and you're doing this sitting next to your current girlfriend. I mean, it was like, you know, he had to have this coming. I think it's like dumb storyline. The thing is that the whole sports entertainer versus wrestler thing was originally done kind of like a tongue in cheek kind of thing, which was okay when I thought that they wouldn't be dealing, you know, this would have been like a lower level storyline, but you know, it is one of the more prominent storylines in AEW right now. But, you know, with all this, you know, now Wheeler Yuta, like, you know, upset with Danielson and name dropping Claudio as, you know, probably also having a problem there. It's just too much for a storyline that doesn't really deserve that much brain power, particularly when you also have to devote that to the MJF stuff.
Yeah. I slow down and simplify and don't overlap. Don't duplicate would be some of my advice for Tony as the one overseeing a lot of the booking. You know, he's the head booker, he's involved in everything, but obviously he also wants to give leeway to wrestlers to come up with their own stuff. But, you know, you have to make the call sometimes that something is too similar to something else, or let's space this out, or let's just have our characters be more clear-cut who they're going to be, and let's stick with it for more than 6 days. Rich, one thing I'll let you know too, when there's dead spots with Javier, he is on delay. So if you get to that point of discomfort, of silence, and you start talking, that's exactly when we're going to start hearing what Javier started saying 3 seconds earlier. And this has been a problem for, you know, like years. And so everybody knows just, let Javier speak when there's silence, even if it takes 10 seconds. It helps my post-show editing, too.
Okay, lesson learned. I'm clearing the floor. I got NBA in the background. It's Javier ISO. Got it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that, don't. We have, human nature is fill those pregnant pauses, but if we do that, we talk over each other, and it becomes. It was funny, like the first 6 weeks it happened, and then we tried to clean it up.
It's been better, hopefully.
Well, I mean, you there's still the yeah. I mean. It's better in the sense that we just all know not to talk when there's silence until you start.
Well, because I'm jumping in sooner than, you know, because I do leave a little pause in case that you are going to move to, like, for example, Rich, you know, I'm waiting for, you know.
Right.
So I do sometimes leave a little bit of space, but, like, you know, so I'm jumping in sooner, too, so.
By the way, Rich and Javier, none of this, if I do my job, anyone will hear other than those listening live right now. All this in-house stuff gets edited out. I clean this stuff up.
Yeah. So, but Rich, you were saying?
Oh, I was going to ask for you your thoughts on our conversation we had going on throughout the night, which is the question about what was the reaction you liked the most from the evening, and of course, from the women's wrestling side, did you agree with some of the callers that there needs to be a little bit more, I don't know what the right word is, like, more judicious in the way they're pushing Saraya as well as the way they've presented Toni Storm?
My thing with Toni Storm is, I don't know, something about her is not working for me, because I really loved – she's been a wrestler who, like, from the first time I saw her, it's been, like, I loved her, and then it's slowly been declining. And I think, her run in on SmackDown kind of, like, left a bad taste in my mouth, and it's kind of, like, lingered into this. So I'm a little bit, like, lower on her than you know, a lot of callers seem to be. But, you know, and the thing, and Saraya is someone I have no, like, attachment to, because I had checked out of wrestling while she was, like, you know, on the rise. And I think I might have seen, like, when she came back, I only saw, like, two of her matches before she was, gone, you know, hurt because of her injury. So I don't know, like, you know, so I don't know, like, what her, like, popularity really is, and, you know, and, like, what her attachment is. I mean, I could see, I mean, hell, I know, you know, most of the stuff I know has been all this, you know, the behind the scenes stuff that, you know, with the Del Rio stuff and all that other stuff. So I kind of wish that they were, like, a little bit more even, like, you know, and again, COVID had the, you know, and people traveling and stuff, but, like, Riho disappearing for, like, ever. Shida, which I think was, you know, a very good champion, and then she basically disappeared for, like, ever. And particularly the way that she was kind of treated, where she would have matches, and then all of a sudden, you know, that tournament where she was taken out injured, and she was like, really? I'm injured? It was, like, news to her. you know, stuff like that. It's just, I am hoping that they just finally get everything and get some momentum. I'm actually more interested in the stuff that Jade is doing right now. You know, with the belt being stolen and the way she's portraying herself. I'm more into that right now than what the stuff with Breaker and Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm and Saraya is going on that side.
Sorry, I just
Anybody?
Wanted to test how long we could all be quiet.
Good God.
Sorry. Rich, I'm sorry. No, Javier, you're up. Javier, what do you think of, I mean, you mentioned it as an aside when commenting on the Danielson-Yuta-Garcia thing, but what was your take on, in the kind of the roller coaster ride you went on with MJF and Regal? And I want to stipulate to the fact that the performances were great. You know, MJF's leaning into this generational talent thing, and I believe he is. So, you know, sometimes I feel bad because, like, man, they just went out there and, you know, the performance was phenomenal, but my critique or my analysis is still tempered by the idea of how much of this needs that editor going, this, not everything with MJF has to be so layered and ambiguous with everyone just sort of on edge, or they should be if they're not, about is this a babyface turn or is this part of the swerve culture of I'm going to convince you, but right when you're convinced, I'm going to pull the rug out from under you. And is that really the best thing to do as often as it's done in pro wrestling or as often as it seems like it's being done with MJF? And so I'm watching this just going, man, the crowd is getting kind of jerked around and you have people being booed like Regal, who are supposed to be being cheered later as he represents Moxley in his hometown. And are they just getting too cute? But at the same time, I hesitate to judge too much, unlike, say, the Danielson-Yuta criticism, which I think stands on its own right now with the information we have. I'm hesitant to be too critical because I kind of want to see how this plays out because they put a ton of thought into it, and they're smart and talented people. It doesn't mean they're infallible, but I also do in this case, I feel it's fair to take somewhat of a wait-and-see attitude before decrying it too much, but I am expressing my concern. So I'm curious where you are on this.
Well, I think the story they're trying to tell is essentially, and nothing in pop culture is really coming to mind, I guess like Breaking Bad a little bit, where they're telling basically a story of a person who's flawed. You know, he's dick, but, and he's telling you why, and, you know, the stuff that drives him. So he's sympathetic in that respect, which is, something that, you know, draw the baby face reactions out of it. And explaining why he's doing the thing. So I think the idea is that it's all his story and they want you to go with his story and kind of like root, you know, there's a decent human being in there because he's been, you know, bullied and stuff. And we understand that it's not necessarily, nature that he's evil, but it's because of, you know, nurture, the environment is what, you know, has pushed him into this direction, and he's, you know, you're kind of rooting for him to turn. And at the end, you know, when you come to the end of the line, he's going to be faced with the decision of whether he does things the right way or just completely embraces evil and, you know, casts out like, you know, the evil. If you watched the Star Wars movie, is like, you know, is he going to be Anakin at the end of episode 3 and giving into the dark side, or is he going to be Anakin at the end of episode 6 where, you know, he has that struggle and then decides, you know, to cast out the evil and save things. So if, depending on the way they decide to go, either you're going to cement him as like a super villain character or a super face character. The problem is that this is all revolves around MJF and his character, and every other wrestler that he's going to be meeting with is going to suffer because of it. Because there's, you know, your emotions towards MJF is, you know, there's a push and pull there. So you're drawn into his story, but then it essentially by because of how how stories work, the people that he's going up against they don't get the same amount of focus, because if you have a good guy versus a bad guy, that the focus on both of those. But this is more of just an MJF storyline, and in the case of Moxley, I don't think it's fair for what Moxley is doing. Had this been CM Punk, I think it probably would have worked better, because I can see it being used to like turn Punk, you know, had he still been around, and I think that might have been, you know, because like if you were to pull Moxley out of this and put Punk in, the story kind of still continues fitting, because remember that was when he first said, you know, the you know, I was a little Jew boy story was with Punk. So, I think that would have been more of the continuation. It feels like they just yanked Punk out of that story and plunked in Moxley, who doesn't have that sort of history of the MJF. So instead they're bringing in the Regal stuff, so to tie that into what would originally been the storyline that we're working in, which again I don't think is fair for what Moxley is doing, because Moxley is, you know, out there really trying to be the champion and the top guy.
Yeah, Rich, what do you have to say to what Javier said?
Well, I think
some of the narrative does get changed, but that's kind of AEW par for the course, right, with a lot of these stories. And so I just see the same in this case. As you go with MJF's story, though, if he wins, like, let's play that out. He wins. Is it the triumphant, I've avenged all of these origin stories, as we've discussed, or is it, no, it was all BS, and I just used that to get to the title? I don't think the latter works, because there's more to come when he wins the title. So when he beats Mox or whomever, whenever he becomes champion, the next thing for me is, how does he handle the stress of, you know, the dog that was chasing the, you know, the mailman? What do you do when you catch the truck? Like, does he just hang on the back of it, or can he evolve from there? I think he can. I think he's enough a professional, even at 26, where his next story is going to be not necessarily the Hangman's insecurities as champion, but more or less, can those demons push him to the greatness, or does it make it a fear of failure more than a pride in success? That makes sense?
Yeah. I think Javier wants to... Oh, go ahead, Javier. Sorry.
Well, yeah, because like what I would to me, this almost is what you're describing, Rich. I think it's kind of like what we're watching with, or what I'm getting out of the Roman Reigns storyline, where it's like he's holding onto the title with like gritted teeth. So that is one of the ways, you know. So if you're going to go more the, it could end up being, you know, when he wins, you know, lead in, the next step would be like leading to self destruction, where he, you know, like just he's. You know, he holds on to the, you know, he has to hold on to the championship so hard that, you know, like sand, it goes through his fingers. So that would be kind of like the next step. And then, you know, you could go on from there. As a babyface, I'm not sure. You just have to have a good heel, you know, to come up next. And I just don't know who that would be, because, you know, they're kind of like that. They're more of even more of an ensemble than WWE in some cases, where it's like, you know, who's no one's like obviously next.
I think you mentioned MJF's storyline is plowing forward with, you know, generational performances, brilliant performances, compelling segments, but sometimes at the expense of others or the show, which is weird to say for a segment that's, you know, destination viewing and maybe selling tickets, drawing eyeballs. But it's, you know, you want to have that Tony Khan leadership also be sure that with the forced audibles, the augmentation due to the Punk situation and the Tony Khan MJF shoot work nonsense and all of that, that it, they're not trying to just fix stuff that went off the rail in a way that is more convoluted than it's worth, or doesn't have that payoff, or, as you just pointed out, doesn't have that next step ready to go. You can't know that for sure until we see what happens. You know, what happens at Full Gear? What do they have set up afterwards? You know, it's like we can sit here and guess on the Garcia thing, and then they can just either change their mind or go against every signal they sent in some planned swerve. And it can make you look a little, feel a little, I guess, what, you know, twice bitten, once bitten, twice shy, in terms of like buying into, reading into the clues, if they're just going to sort of arbitrarily shift. And I worry a little bit about that with MJF in the macro sense over the course of weeks and months in this storyline, but also in the micro sense, even within the same promo, are you giving MJF too much latitude to have these like show-stealing, compelling, layered segments if it's not serving the greater good and it's more about just scoring points with, look at how brilliant I can be and how layered I can be, so that it's going to draw Breaking Bad comparisons, as opposed to something that fits better within the structure of pro wrestling. Javier, anything else you want to bring up on that, or any other topics?
Well, it helps in terms of building his character. And like, if he's, and I would only really go that way if he's going to be your top guy going forward. So if it really is like, you know, they don't feel like they're going to sign him in 4 years, then this would be like, or in 4 years in 24, then, you know, this would be like bad, because this is going to probably end up hurting Moxley. I don't think it'll destroy Moxley, but like, you know, I think it ends up hurting him a bit. And, you know, and like, I mean, granted, it was the injury to Hangman Page, and you have that, you know, that hanging over it. But, you know, it would have ended with Moxley beating Hangman Page, and then Hangman Page just disappearing from the scene while, you know, the promo, because the thing after the fake cash in, thing that kind of felt like that was going to happen no matter what. After, you know, and I,
right,
it
I
felt
agree.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Him, yeah, yeah. It just felt that Hangman Page would have, you know, just pinned, and then he would have been forgotten about, and then that is not good for Hangman Page. He just lost the match, and we're going to forget about him because we're already moving on to the next thing. Don't worry about this guy. We'll just, you know, sweep him out, you know, sweep him out of the ring with the broom, you know? And, you know, so that lowers his, you know, that lowers his stock. So, and that's his danger. I mean, and so it's a calculated risk that Tony has to take. Because this could make MJF a superstar, small s, and if he keeps him, that's great, but you're doing that at cost of some of the people around them, so it's fine, yeah. As long as you're also building up who his ultimate opponent is going to be, whether that's going to be a Darby Allin, his nemesis. You need to be building his nemesis, whether he's going to be a heel, a face nemesis, or if he's going to be a heel nemesis. I think you really need to start building that now. And I thought there was a point where you had a good with Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin. You had, you know, those were good people. I mean, I think Starks is another one that'd be, you know, good in that role, but they've all kind of like disappeared for the most part. So, you know, we'll see when we get there. Yeah.
What else, Javier?
And you mentioned I'm confident of things until full gear that it's going to be kind of like nebulous until we get to full gear, and then in full gear he'll make his decision, and then we'll find out, or he might just lose, and that sends off into another entire different spiral where he came really close, because I mean that's also a compelling storyline. You know, he fails, and then it's like, you know, what is he going to have to do to, you know, get back to that location? So, you know, There are different actions to get to that. Yeah, and you're right. You know, at that point, you're kind of just speculating depending on which way they're going to go. But at least up to full gear, I feel confident that's like, you know, gray until we get there.
Yeah.
I do have to say that I have a soft spot for Dalton Castle, and whenever he gets his big super, you know, super massive entrance, I'm always makes me smile. Jeremy Lin, he's completely retired, right? He doesn't have like another match in him.
Jeremy Lin, yeah. Well, actually, I don't know that he's completely retired. I don't know that there was I don't recall there being a medical reason he retired. I think he just, you know, put in his time.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if he gets one, you know, he does one match for Jericho, because he was also someone who was, he was big in ROH, like, early days, wasn't he?
Yeah. I've been watching him since the late 1980s, I every opportunity I get to say, I think Jerry Lynn has one of the best, over the course of 30 years, one of the best bodies of work of any wrestler to never, you know, got anywhere close to getting rich in this business. His body of work relative to his pay is as disproportionate as anybody. And the number of wrestlers who had their best matches with Jerry Lynn over his 30-year career is arguably higher than anybody else during that same time span, or at least he's in that conversation.
Yeah, I just remember him more ECW than the RH, because when RH was launching, I was around the time I stopped. So, I mean, I did keep an eye on RH a little bit, but I kind of remembered him in it, but I didn't know if he was like a big part of RH or not.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big part of it. I think he's more remembered for ECW. Rich, how about you?
Oh, yeah, he was I wouldn't say go so far as to say legend in ECW, but his fights with Van Damme, his, you know, missed over the TV title, his wrestling later in his career where he was just kind of like that legend. I love Jerry Lynn. He was one of my favorite ECW guys, I would say, behind you know, ECW guys that really didn't get known as much as they should have. For instance, Lance Storm, I think is criminally underrated. I think a lot of the work he did was very smart, and the stuff with the Impact players, again, with Len, against Len and his cohort, was some were smuggled underneath all of the Tammy Lynn Sitch and Tammy Lynn B and all the Francine stuff. And so, yeah, I think Lynn getting spiked as part of that story is another way that Jericho can prove he dislikes and completely dishonors the Ring of Honor history as the Ocho, which is something I never thought I would say in any word. So kudos to him for doing it.
Kudos
for him for saving. Kudos for him for saving Ian Riccaboni, because I don't think we would ever send Ian Riccaboni again to be. legit worried. I'm like, is he going to take a bump? Please don't tell me he's not going to take a bump.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah, absolutely, Jared Lynn to the rescue. And it was that was quite a safe looking pile driver. I think even the director saw it coming with that cutaway to the rear view as it was slowly going downward. Which, by the way, I applaud. This is a larger issue, but there's way too many, to put it indelicately, just bodies being stacked up on the injured reserve list right now for AEW. And, I mean, injuries happen. WWE has injuries. You know, everybody does. But, I mean, at some point, you get to that stage where you're like, how stiff do we need to legit be? And can we look at the moves we do that work that are safe and lean on those more than the moves we do that are less safe? And, you know, it takes a wrestler's eye to diagnose what happened tonight. And, you know, was it the impact of Moxley hitting Page? Was it the angle at which Page came at Moxley? Or was it Page's flip bump and landing that led to, you know, the match having to be stopped? I don't know. I mean, I've watched it back. I freeze framed. I've paused. I can't tell with my eye what happened or what went wrong there. But at some point, you know, you step back and you look at the injured reserve list in AEW. And, you know, even Punk, regardless of the press conference, the media Q&A controversy and backstage fight, he was going to be out injured for a long time no matter what. So I don't know. I mean, sometimes at some point you want to step back and say, when we're doing weekly shows plus pay-per-views, do we want to, as Vince McMahon did multiple times, have some locker room leaders step up and show footage and say, this is smart and this is dangerous and we want to, you know, be resilient and able to deliver matches year after year without long injury time off. And so we're going to focus on this type of style as opposed to this more reckless, stiff, hard-hitting style that is leading to a lot of injuries. Anything else you want to go with? We're running real long, so I don't want to go too much longer.
Yeah, just one last quick thing. Speaking of doubling up on storylines, since it looks like Swerve and Our Glory they're teasing like they might end up going breaking up because of, you know, what happened in that scene. Also, the Pack and Phoenix, Pac was, you know, stopped from using the hammer. So think this leads to a breakup, or, you know, it's gonna, or are there gonna be another turn for the Lucha Brothers and joining Pac in Nefarious Way?
There are, just to add it to, I mean, this was kind of, it was the beginning of my unrest and angst with the pace of the booking, but can they just be like a successful trios for like 6 to 9 months before we start teasing breakups? I mean, it's, I don't know. Yeah, Rich?
I think I was encouraged by the post-match where Phoenix punched Pack in the ribs to kind of get his attention and hugged him. So it seemed more like teammates that were arguing than some irreconcilable difference.
Which is usually someone screws someone over.
Yeah, I don't want teases.
Fair.
We just need people to get along and stay together and tell more traditional stories. I shouldn't say traditional, just more stories of there's wrestlers and here's who they are. And here's who they will be for a very long time. And there's a reason to dislike them and root for them to fall on their face or lose. And they're very talented and they pull you in with their promos and with their moves and with their bumps and they stick together. And we don't need to just feel like wrestlers are just sitting around going, how can I get on TV? I know, I'll pitch a turn. How can I get TV time and move on from and make sure I don't get lost in the mix? I know I'll rush the storyline. So there's no – the way to get on TV is to forward something or twist or add a twist rather than just reinforce things. And I think it's part of the booking culture that would behoove AEW to address. I'll put it that way.
I think it's even worse than that. I think it's just that Tony Khan wants to see Pac versus Phoenix or Pac versus Penta. You know?
Wow.
I think that, and it's like, oh, I want to get to that match, and I wanted to get it by Full Gear. Let's just do what we have to do to get there.
And I don't know if that's worse or better or equal, but yeah, it's not good if that is the yeah. situation. Yeah.
I do want to add in. AEW just tweeted a medical update on Adam Page.
Yeah.
He was taken to Cincinnati Trauma Center and diagnosed with a concussion. He was discharged but will remain in AEW's concussion protocol. AEW and Hangman Page are grateful for the exemplary response and care of the staff and local medical personnel and are appreciative of the love and support of fans everywhere.
Yeah, I just got a text from somebody. I didn't know AEW was going to tweet that out, that the belief backstage is it was a concussion and not a neck injury. So I don't know if that – yeah, I mean, I guess that's good news. I mean, concussions aren't good news, but relative to a serious neck injury, it is.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I think that getting it out tonight, especially given the criticism they've had in the last 72 to 96 hours about things they've been – unduly opaque about, this helps. This is one of those things you just kind of, just like any other sport, you put it out there and you move
yes.
on.
Yes. Yep. Cool. Javier, anything else before we wrap up here?
No, I just got to praise Rich there for saying unduly oblique instead of just not being transparent.
Yes.
Hey. I'm in week 8 of the Keith Lee book club and it's doing wonders for me.
Yep.
No, and from a speech communication standpoint, it's actually better to go with the now I'm letting myself down with the word the positive, not the absence of a negative in your language. So you would say I'm happy, not I'm not sad. So it's actually better, Rich, to say oblique rather than not transparent. Just say the word that you're trying to say instead of the saying two words when one will do better. So you're not. This is not like like Keith Lee is saying like unnecessary multisyllable nonsense for effect. You are actually setting a good example for orders everywhere.
Yeah,
oh, well, I
just, to make sure people don't miss. You know, I wasn't calling Rich out. I was actually literally, you know.
I agree.
Giving
yes,
a thumbs up for that.
Listen, we know who has the theme song and who doesn't at this point, Javier. I know where things stand.
We're talking to Sean. Let's go to Tennessee. We're talking to Sean.
Even a caller has a jingle, Rich. That's new, though. That was new last week.
Wow.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried that Wade was replacing me, so.
like I said, it was offered up. It wasn't something I asked for, but it was. Oh, actually, Sean asked for it, and it got delivered. All right, Javier, can we wrap up there?
Yeah, I believe that's a nice way to.
Yes.
Sign off. That was the word I was looking for.
Cool.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Javier. Always a pleasure. Check out Javier's work at pwtorch.com and PWTorch VIP podcasting. Rich, we ran long. I know you didn't sign up for this knowing there'd be this serious situation with Hangman Page that certainly extended the show, but I appreciate you sticking with us here late on a Tuesday night, and we hung on long enough to have that update from AEW. So that is good news in as much as that concussion is ever good news. Cause I think, athletes have to retire due to concussions. That happens. Every concussion makes the next one easier and there's long-term negative effects of concussions. This is not to make light of it, but a neck injury to me, at least feels better. It's better to rule that out at this point in place of a concussion. But it's, you know, it's a brain injury and a neck injury. Neither are fun. And that was pretty nasty. I'm assuming it was Page's landing and hitting his head on the mat that caused the concussion, not the impact of the clothesline. There's not a good angle on the King Kong Lariat because it's a rear view, but it looked like Hangman ran into it and it was a normal, you know, large surface area, hit the collarbone, you know, the way you're supposed to, the collarbone and the chin, but not the larynx. It looked like it was from a bad angle delivered normally. And then Hangman took the flip bump and just hit the side of his head on the mat and was knocked out, you know, and then diagnosed with concussion. And I rewatched it during the show too. And like I said, I've been chatting with some people in AEW. That is sort of the assessment at this point, but I wouldn't call it conclusive.
Yeah. And I saw Chris Nowitzki also wanted to give kudos to the referee who was the first to stop the match and seek Doc Samson. And just, you know, they've been trained well. And Chris was like, those seconds that sometimes you don't get back if someone just tries to gut through it or doesn't notice that someone's trying to gut through it. So kudos to him as well.
That's something WWE does, the referees do. They always check immediately with wrestlers after any kind of landing or bump. And then they go and communicate to the other wrestler an update. And that's what this referee did. He went, you know, I mean, wrestlers are so good at selling. You don't know if they're selling or not. So you go, you ask for that verbal validation that they're okay. He didn't get that, or Hangman outright said, I'm not okay. It was one or the other. He immediately went, looked at ringside, called for the doctor, and then immediately after that turned to Mox and informed him. And then Mox crawled over and looked at Hangman and, you know, probably wanted to say something to him or at least get a good look at him. And then he retreated to the corner and just observed as the medical team did their thing. I think this counts as AEW doing, as Chris Nowinski pointed out, really good job. I think they followed proper protocol here.
Yeah, so that was Paul Turner. I want to give credit, give him a name.
Yeah. Yep.
Paul Turner, big props on that.
Yep, and it's important. you don't want to get wrapped up in the moment and just assume anyone's selling. You have to be diligent all the time on that because when you are concussed, if you take one more bump, it's by a magnification exponentially worse than taking time off to let that concussion heal itself as best it can. But you only get so many concussions, but it counts as about 10 concussions if you get concussed twice within a minute or two, roughly speaking, not medically speaking, but it's probably not too far off either. Rich, thanks. How can anything else you want to add, by the way, before we sign off?
No. I think especially given the climate we see nationally, we just saw that with Tua Tagliavia in the Miami Dolphins, where he came back too soon and had a horrid second concussion. And I just think, you know, I'm really appreciative, if anything, for people paying attention and doing their jobs the right way in cases like this, because these are the little things that could become big things if you don't. Thank you very much for having me on here. I really appreciate being on a Tuesday edition. Like you said, it ran a little long, but I think when an eventful night like this, stuff happens. And that's what I signed up for. But if folks want to follow me, I obviously listen to East Coast Cast, everything with Rich and Wade on the VIP side, as well as the Deep Dive with myself and Will Cooling. We'll have one, I believe, next week where he and I are going to be talking about what's going on in Europe, as well as the Ariel Helwani, Triple H, Tony Khan. What does it mean to ask questions? Like, is it a Frost Nixon or is this just a Mickey Mouse thing? Whatever it is, how do you handle those? And kind of just talk through it, because I think that's been a pretty good breeding ground for discussion. And Will and I haven't chatted in a while, so he and I always have pretty good chats. And then finally, of course, if you have any show suggestions or you want to ask a question myself, my main man from the Midwest Express, assistant or is it associate editor? Our titles matter. I want to
assistant editor
Zach Haydorn, and I have been long time coming, but with work it's been a little tough for me to do an everything mailbag, but we have back mailbags and people like Craig are more than happy to remind me that we're a little light on the mail. So we're going to get to one of those soon. And finally, you can follow me on Twitter at @RichRICH_FANN. If you'd like to discuss wrestling, any of my columns, or, you know, just general life, just don't be that jerk. Don't be that guy, and we're good.
Sounds great. Thanks, Rich. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you on the flagship later this week and then on SmackDown post-show on Friday.
All right, Wade, a pleasure.